Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com. Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to Mortal and Strong, the podcast. I'm Dr. Liz Murray, founder of this project, where each episode we will be sharing one interview from one of the voices from our project. Presented by myself and Laura Middleton Hughes, each episode will feature one voice, someone sharing their story of overcoming major medical problems early on in life to share a message of strength, hope, and resilience to others. To learn more about the project, please visit our website, www.mortalandstrong.com. And now for the latest episode.
Hi, and welcome back to another episode of Mortal and Strong. I'm Laura.
And I'm Liz.
And today we're joined on the sofa by Tracy, who's talking to us all about her experience with secondary breast cancer and what gets her up and out of bed in the morning. Thank you for coming today.
You're welcome.
So we're going to start off with our quick fire round, as we have always done, just to get us all in the mood. Laptop or tablet?
Ooh. Laptop.
Carpet or wooden floor?
Carpet.
Cadbury's or Nestle?
Cadbury's.
Always.
Yeah.
Crepe or pancake?
Pancake.
Balcony or a terrace?
Oh.
If you're on holiday, like.
Depends on the view. Balcony.
A relaxing holiday or an active holiday?
Relaxing holiday.
Bright socks or black?
Ooh.
Odd socks.
Bright. I'm just thinking, I've got lots of black socks, but that's because of work.
Yeah,
but bright socks.
Own a house or rent?
Own.
Caravan or a tent?
Caravan.
And lastly, art or writing?
Writing.
There we go. Gotten to know you a little bit better. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Okay.
And we are going to rewind a little bit back to a day before any diagnosis came mm-hmm. out. Who were you? Where were you? What were you up to in life?
So before my primary diagnosis, I was 46, going on 47. I was working as an advanced nurse practitioner in what's called an ambulatory care unit at a hospital in Peterborough. Married, two children, Harry and Maisie, who at the time, I'm now trying to think back, Harry would have been about to go to uni and Maisie was just finishing, about to do her GCSEs. And we had a little dog, a different dog then, called Crookie.
What breed of dog?
She was a Jack Russell.
Aww.
We have a cockapoo now. He's completely bonkers. So that's where I was and leading quite a normal, happy life, fit, healthy. I used to run a lot, part of a running club.
And then what happened?
So in, trying to think now, about September time, me and my husband had just been to Wales and climbed Snowdon and come down. And 2 weeks later, I found a lump in my breast when I was having a shower. I wasn't examining myself. I just found it from having a shower. And so the next day, went into work, asked one of the doctors to say, yes, you have definitely got a lump there. So I got straight onto my GP. Bearing in mind all of this time, I wasn't expecting it to be breast cancer.
Did you know you should be checking? Were you checking?
I did check, but not as often as I should okay. check. I wasn't a monthly checker.
So when you say you found it in the shower, how did you come across
it? I was washing. I did always wash, round under my arms and around my boobs with my hands. And I think that's why I felt it, as opposed to if I was using the scrunchie I'd use everywhere else, I wouldn't have felt it.
Yeah.
So that's how I felt it. Didn't tell my husband about it at that time because I don't want to worry anybody, but also I didn't think it was going to be breast cancer. I thought it'd be some kind of cyst or something hormonal. Went to the GP, referred me on the 2-week wait, had an appointment, and I chose to go to the hospital that I work at, which it wouldn't have been my local hospital, because again, I was nipping into breast clinic whilst I was at work and coming out again.
Okay.
And that was the end of it.
Yes.
Okay. So that was the end of it. So I went to the breast clinic, and it's a one-stop shop situation. Yeah. So I had the mammogram, then went for the ultrasound, and they said we need to do a fine needle biopsy. And I still wasn't overly concerned at that point. We then went to see the consultant at the end of all of that. He knew I was a nurse. And I said, what do you think? And he was up front and said, I think this is breast cancer, looking at your ultrasound and your mammogram. Mm-hmm. At which point I knew he wouldn't say that unless he was fairly certain. Mm-hmm. So I then walked out of there swearing a lot under my breath.
And you were on your own still?
Yes. My choice.
In uniform?
Yes.
Technically.
Yes.
And you hadn't told your husband at this point?
No.
Wow.
A couple of people at work knew because I had to go out for an appointment and that was it. So walked out of there swearing quite a lot, went back into work, dragged my friend out of the office, told her, and then I went home, and then that evening had to obviously tell my husband that I knew I'd had a breast lump for 2 weeks and not told him, and
how,
it looked like it was breast cancer.
How did he react?
Completely shocked, because he wasn't expecting it at all. So he was completely shocked and upset. He wasn't cross at me at all, and I was expecting he would be cross at me. At that point, we'd got, my son was at uni, he'd just started uni, but my daughter was at home. So I was in the situation where I didn't want to tell her anything until I knew. I'm somebody the whole way along, I need to get things straight in my head, and I need a plan, because mm-hmm. when I tell people, I want to tell them what's wrong and what the plan is.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to tell her anything either, because we still weren't 100% sure. Went back for the biopsy results, and the consultant said, well, the biopsy's come back as clear. And I was like, oh, but I don't think it's clear. I think we have just missed the cells. So now we need to do a core biopsy. So it's a bigger biopsy. So I had that done. And I actually said to him at the time, if this comes back clear, what do we do next? Mm. And he said, I think I would still take you to theatre.
Wow.
Okay.
He was that convinced. So the core biopsy came back as positive. They'd ultrasounded my lymph nodes and there was no inflammation, so they weren't concerned about them. But obviously, as part of the lumpectomy that was then planned, they did a sentinel lymph biopsy. Mm-hmm. The two that they removed were positive. Mm-hmm. So I then had to go back again a month later and have a lymph node clearance, and the rest of those were clear. So it was just the two that they'd biopsied that got disease in them. We'd already talked about the plan, which was going to be surgery, chemo, and then radiotherapy, and then endocrine treatment. They weren't 100% sure about chemo originally, but they said, I think because of your age, I was 47 at the time, we would recommend chemo. And I was like, that's what I want. I'm happy that you've told me that. I want everything. And then we got the lymph node biopsy back, so it was definitely chemo at that point.
When you had that diagnosis of a confirmed breast cancer, how did it make you feel?
I really can't remember. I think it was more about me having to tell other people. That was more of it. And in my mind, my best friend had had a breast cancer diagnosis a few years before, and I'd gone through it with her. And to my mind, I'd got a plan, and this was 9 to 12 months out of my life. Let's get it done, and then I'll be back. That was how I viewed it. I was very positive the whole way through, and I think I'd had time to get used to the idea of the diagnosis. Before I'd got the actual diagnosis, I knew in my head that's what it was, if you see what I mean.
Did you feel like the nursing background of your training kind of helped in viewpoint?
It did help. It did help in some ways. In other ways,
you knew too much.
Yeah, particularly when I went to the appointment and they said it was in the lymph nodes. I was, more upset, angry than when they told me I got breast cancer. I swore and apologised, and then I cried, and Gary, my husband, was looking at me and said, what's wrong with her?
What was the reason that you felt that was more upsetting? Was it because you feel that
because I knew the spread was more likely if it was in my lymph nodes. If I'd gone back and they'd said, we haven't got clear margins, we need to go in again and take more, I would have coped with that better than knowing it was in the lymph node. So at that point, I had to sit back and be the patient. And I had to say to the, I said to the breast nurse, can you explain to Gary the potential of what that means?
There's a problem. Oh, you've seen other patients. You've dealt with other people. And we were talking before in a previous interview, when you know too much and the older view of breast cancer has spread, it automatically raises this fear of that's the end.
Yeah.
It's doomsday. Yes.
What support was out there for you? Did you find you got quite a lot of support, or were you very much just get on with it, do it myself and get over it?
I had lots of, I've got a big friend group, luckily, so I had lots of support from friends, and even people that I would say were more of a acquaintances than friends got in touch, because you do hear stories of some people saying, I lost friends through a cancer diagnosis because they didn't know what to do with it. And I think I had more people contact me.
It's strange, isn't it? People come out the woodwork.
Yeah.
It's like,
which
ill,
in itself can be quite a pressure because, as you said, Liz, when you're talking about people contacting you regarding this, you want to answer everybody, but you're not always in the place that you can answer people. And you have to keep explaining your story. And how do you answer that question? How are you? I don't know how I am.
It's exhausting, isn't it?
Yeah, it is exhausting. That's the word.
How many years ago was this?
So 2018, October, was my primary diagnosis.
Okay. And then you had the treatment. Mm-hmm. You went through chemotherapy?
Yeah, chemotherapy, radiotherapy.
How did you cope with both of those?
Relatively well, actually. I mean, chemotherapy is not nice, but I got into a routine with it. I learned after my first cycle, after I went out somewhere, my son was home from uni, he came with me, we went and met some friends for coffee, doing absolutely fine. I had to go and get a couple of things out of Asda, and I did that hit the brick wall thing. Yeah. And he basically had to steer me around Asda and say, Mum, what is it you want? And I was driving home at that point, so I learned after that that for that first 5-6, and actually turned into 7 days by the time we get to the end of the chemo, 6 cycles, that I didn't drive.
Yeah,
I'd still go out and do things, and say we'd got the dog, so most days I'd go for a walk, but it might only be to the top of the road.
It's and then that got and often rather than a big thing at once.
And I'd start to do a little bit of yoga at home, and then I used to go to a yoga class. I was a member, I did used to run, and I did run initially, but then I had a PICC line in for the chemo, and we had a problem one day where the line flushed back with a load of blood. So we thought that might be to do with some like heart pumping and things like that. It turned out it wasn't. I had a DBT in the PICC line.
And for those who don't know what a PICC line is, it's a line that goes into your main vein in your arm.
Yeah.
And it directs everything direct like into your main heart kind of arteries.
So my veins weren't very good anyway. And obviously chemotherapy ruins them even more. So I had my first lot of chemo through peripheral cannula, and then I had the PICC line put in.
And with the PICC line, it's often you see people like wrapped it in, I don't know, cling film or something, because you can't get it wet, you can't swim with it.
Yeah, that's right.
So actually, it's as much as it's there and it's great to use, it's actually not very convenient if you've got it long term. So it can be quite that's probably a hard thing to deal with, because I don't know about you, but the fact that when you assume you lost your hair on chemo, or at least you lost some of it, you know, then you've got this thing in your arm. It's those visuals that kind of make you feel like a patient.
Yeah, that's what gives people the clues. And with a PICC line, it's different to the port, as in it has to be flushed every so often. So in between that 3 weekly cycle of chemo, you're all going once or twice to get your line flushed and get some bloods taken out of it. But it was, and luckily, although I got the DVT in the line, it did continue to work.
Okay.
So they could get blood out
of
it.
So you had that throughout your whole treatment plan?
Yeah.
And radiotherapy, how did that make you feel?
More tired than what I expected it to, although they do warn you of that. Again, I actually went back to work when I was having my radiotherapy. That was my choice. I wanted to get back to normal.
Did you feel though, I mean, there's that pressure, but also I hear a lot of people saying, I'm only having radiotherapy.
Yeah, no, but it's not. That's what I discovered.
Because often people will say, well, I had to stop working through chemo, but I tried to go back to work through radio. From my own experience, and I'm sure you probably are similar, when you start radiotherapy, it's kind of okay.
Yeah.
And then you get about week two and you're like, oh, my skin's getting really sore. But by week three, oh my goodness, I could hardly move because I was so exhausted all the time.
Yeah.
And it was like, at that point, people are like, you're nearly finished, yay. And you're like, but I feel shit.
My work were really flexible and they were like, you can basically come and go as you please. The unit I worked in was next door to the oncology unit. So I would go to work, go and have my radiotherapy, and then I would go home. So I probably only did a couple of hours a day. And actually a couple of times when it was delayed because the machines aren't working and things, it worked out quite handy because I was just at work and I'd sit and drink tea. But progressing on from that, when I had radiotherapy on my spine for my metastases, that was a big dose because I was at risk of spinal cord compression. Okay. And that made me feel not dissimilar to what I felt on chemotherapy.
So just really poorly as well.
Yeah, all that sort of the fuzzy headness and just like legs don't seem to work and really tired. Not as bad as chemotherapy, but it was more noticeable than when I had it for the primary.
And I think it's just, it is important that we don't dismiss radiotherapy because it is quite a invasive treatment. And I do hear say lots of people, oh, I just had a bit of surgery and a little bit of radiotherapy and I'm fine. And it's like, that is still such a major treatment.
Yeah.
And it still impacts other organs and other parts of your body.
I had it was high up on my spine. So it affected all my my throat and my nose. I had this really horrible cough that went on for a few weeks after radiotherapy had finished. There was nothing else going on. It was just the reaction to it. High dose steroids, high dose antiemetics, and luckily I didn't have any sickness or anything. But that did wipe me out more than what I'd appreciate it was going to.
And then you went from your diagnosis, went through all the treatment, came out the other end. Were you then told you were cancer-free? Like, how did it...
No. My oncology team said to me, so the system they operate, and obviously they knew I was a nurse as well, so I was aware of things because of my background. The system they have there is they said, we don't see you once a year because either you're going to come in once a year, they're going to say yes, I feel fine, and off you go. Or the risk is you think, well, I'm not going to get that symptom checked out because I'm going to see the consultant in 3 months' time, so they don't bother. So they discharge you, but you have an open route back
in
again.
Watch and wait, and if you have a problem, you go straight in.
And they give you like a care plan and discharge plan when you leave, and that included information about pain and secondary symptoms
as well.
That's
really good to hear, because actually that isn't something that's common, I think, around every hospital.
We've had a few people sat here who weren't told one signs to look for.
Yeah. And even down to things like pain, no one's really sort of specified it has to be, you know, come in if it's more than 2 weeks.
Yes.
And often the secondary pain, again, it's something that you don't necessarily realise, but it can be put down to something else quite easily.
Yes.
Often,
which is what we all do.
Cough, or whether it's, you know, pain or something. So how long after your sort of at that point when you were let go, did you then get any signs or symptoms that took you back?
So it was, would have been initially May 2022. We came back from a holiday in Mexico and I had some back pain, which I put down to a long haul flight. And I went, I can't believe I did this in hindsight, went to a chiropractor and the pain went away, completely went away. And I, to this day, I will never know whether that was metastases or whether I had got another issue. And then in the September of that year, again, we came back from holiday from Turkey, got pain again in the same area, similar type of pain. Again, I related it to sitting around not doing much in a flight. And because it had happened in the May when I'd come home, and then I'd been absolutely pain-free, I'd been running and everything, nothing at all. So I put it down to that again. Went back to the chiropractor again.
Was pain in the same place?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I had another session. Pain went, but it came back again within a couple of days. So it wasn't effective that time. So then I started to think, oh, I need to keep an eye on this. And again, it wasn't a really painful pain.
Bone pain is often not painful pain.
It was niggly.
It's quite a dull, achy niggle.
In the evening, I'd sit on the sofa and then I'd change that position.
Do you find it sort of rubbing the area?
Pillow behind my back and then off it, sit forward and then back. Paracetamol helped it as well. The thing that made it worse and probably the real reason I made me get it checked out was I couldn't run. because when I ran,
how long
the pain,
are you, like, how long a time scale is it from you had that first flight to?
The first flight was in May.
Okay.
And then the second one was September. And once we got to September, I was in contact with my team at the hospital within about 2 weeks.
So it was several months of...
From that first pain, yeah. If that's what that was. Yeah. And I say, we'll never know. But once I decided that this wasn't going away this time, I made contact with them quite quickly. And they had me in with blood and bone scans and everything straight away. So I think from contacting them to actually... getting told definitely it was secondary breast cancer, 3-4 weeks. It wasn't long because I had a bone scan, which was abnormal but didn't seem to fit with where I'd got my pain.
Okay.
And there was something on the bone scan, but nobody was sure what it was. So I then had a CT scan that confirmed that I'd got one metastasis on my spine. So that was my diagnosis. And my consultant then sent me for an MRI spine and a PET scan. The MRI spine and the PET scan showed up there were more areas on my spine than just the one, but they hadn't been picked up on CT. And the one that was picked up on CT, the vertebrae collapsed and I was at risk of spinal cord compression. So that's why I then had the radiotherapy.
And isn't it amazing how like it can't show up on one particular scan?
I know, which
that's
is scary.
What people have.
Yes.
You know, I think back and I'm like, I generally have CT scans and it's like, but they don't check it against, like, say, a PET scan or an MRI.
Yeah.
And it's only if you have a specific problem in a specific area that they'll look at it closer.
So if I'd gone in and just had the CT and hadn't got the big area at the top, nothing else would have shown up.
Wow, yeah.
But there were other areas there. So
and then spinal cord compression is...
Yes, and I had no symptoms of that at all. And actually where I had my pain was more related to a small area on my rib than it was to the metastasis that had caused vertebrae compression. And say no other symptoms of spinal cord compression. So that was the bit that... completely freaked me out when they said, we need to speak to Adam Brooks' team about whether you need surgery or not. I was like...
Because it's a medical emergency, isn't
yes,
it? And obviously you being medical...
So the radiotherapy literally started the next day. I left on Thursday and was back on Friday for the planning and had the first session 5 o'clock Friday evening.
And how are you feeling at that point?
Shell-shocked at that point because I'd gone from being told at my initial consultation it was one area... and that I could potentially have the SBAR radiotherapy, which...
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
It's in some ways considered potentially curative.
Wow, okay.
However, I did question the consultant. It wasn't my consultant, it was a different doctor. I did question them and say, sorry? And they said, well, if it's just on one area and we use SBAR, it can be curative. And
I said... it's spread. It's breast cancer that's spread.
Which is what I said.
The seeds are there.
Yeah.
And breast cancer isn't a curable disease right now.
I said, you need to be very careful using that term because this is metastasis, so it's spread.
It's already...
I didn't think metastases were curable.
Not but in breast cancer.
I had to backtrack a little bit. So I'd gone from that to then within a couple of days, once they'd got the result of the PET and the MRI of the spine, that actually you've got more areas and actually we're really concerned about spinal cord compression.
Is it bone only or had it gone to any organs?
No, it's bone only. And at that point, we hadn't told anybody else because, again, I wanted to know exactly what we were dealing with and what we were doing about it.
So your children knew, obviously, about your primary diagnosis.
Yeah.
How did it feel telling them this time around?
Worse than the first time. Worst thing I've ever had to do. Tell them that. And just trying to think where we were at that point. So by the time we told them about the secondary, I'd had my 5 lots of radiotherapy because Maisie, my daughter, was at uni and my son was living in London. And I didn't want to tell either of them over the phone or FaceTime, and I didn't want to tell them separately. And coincidentally, beginning of December was my husband's birthday, and they were coming home for his birthday. So we delayed it. So we waited until they were home and sat them down as soon as they were both there. Because once I've decided I'm going to say something, I can't be doing with niceties. We had to sit down and tell it straight away. And that was worse than telling them for the primary diagnosis for me, because I had to explain a bit about, although they both had a rough idea. And so one of my best friends has got secondary breast cancer, and my daughter is best friends with her daughter. Mm-hmm. So she knew a bit about it. So I just had to explain that this is a different type of diagnosis, and this is now classed as incurable, but we have lots of treatment options and we can manage it as long as we can manage it, type thing. But yeah, that wasn't good. And then unfortunately I only got about 6 months on my first line treatment before I had a bit more, only small, but a bit more progression. So then I was just settling down. We were all just settling down. I had no new pain. I was feeling well. I'd walked 26 miles a week or so before raising money for Breast Cancer Now and Make Seconds Count. And then got these scan results again on my own again, because chose to go on my own because I wasn't expecting any problems. So then having to then tell them again 6 months later, well, this first lot of treatment's not worked as well as we wanted it to work.
Can I ask what type was it? Was it HER2 positive? Was it estrogen positive?
It's estrogen positive and HER2 low.
Okay. So the HER2 low.
As much as we know, because we've not been able to biopsy because of where it is.
Right, so it could have changed from your primary.
Yeah, but initially that was my concern because the ribo only lasted 6 months. My concern was, are we dealing with something different? But they say they've not been able, bones are notoriously difficult to biopsy, and they said we need to biopsy when it's active disease and we can't get to any of yours anyway. We're likely to get a negative result and that might be a false, that's not going to tell us what we need to know anyway. And now I'm on everolimus and exametazine, and I've been on that since July time.
Okay. So you're coming up to sort of 9 months of being on it.
Yeah. So I'm a bit more relaxed that we potentially are still dealing with what I thought we were dealing with.
And how are symptoms on those drugs?
A lot harder than the ribo. I've been fiddling around with the dose of the everolimus because I've had really bad, still got them now, mouth ulcers and sore mouth in general, and definitely more tired than I was on the ribo.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing that you can't handle, but then some days it's just like, just give me a break. Some days it's just like, and I've lost some weight because I couldn't eat particularly well. I may be able to eat now, but I wouldn't say I enjoy eating because it's just a bit uncomfortable.
Does it change like the flavour as well? Because of that metallic taste with certain.
I haven't really got that. It's just that it's sore eating and swallowing, and mouth feels dry a lot of the time as well. So we have just dropped the dose down. So I'm just waiting to see if that settles the mouth a little bit more. But it's definitely a harder drug, which my consultant had warned me about, than what I didn't really have, apart from feeling a little bit tired with the ribo. There's nothing else. But this, I do feel more tired on this one. But it doesn't stop me doing anything because I'm a bit bloody-minded.
How has it changed your lifestyle? Like, do you live differently? Do your mindset is different, or?
It's changed. I don't run anymore because they were concerned about the impact on the spine. But I do lots of other things, and that's sort of my therapy, keeping fit. And also I have a lot of social life around that as well. I probably have less patience than I used to have, and sometimes have to keep things
remind
in my head
rather than
say things out loud. I think it's probably one of the things I have to be more careful of. But yeah, it can't but change your mindset. You do view things differently and you view the future differently. For example, I probably wouldn't have done this previously.
So prior, you wouldn't have the confidence?
No.
It pushes you out of your comfort zone in ways.
Yeah. And also it's because I know with this there's going to be an end product and there's going to be a piece of art. It's just something to have there for forever, for me or for whoever, isn't it? It's something
I mean, I'm just going to say that you did have your photographs done for this project before this interview, and you looked amazing. And
thank you.
For people to show. But that's what is so incredible about this is we're finding people coming in quite nervous and not really sure how they're going to feel doing the pictures. And and to see that everyone is almost, you know, embracing it and really building that confidence and allowing themselves to kind of do something out of their comfort zone is really admirable, actually.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing it gives you. I mean, I'll put my hands up and be completely honest. I'm quite happy not being in the position where I'm pushing myself out,
of course,
pushing my boundaries, but it is one thing that it has done, definitely.
Do you still, or did you ever have anger?
I never, with the primary diagnosis, I never went down that route because I knew that there was nothing to gain from it. I never said why me, because again, I knew, again, probably my nursing background, that there's not an answer to that question. Cancer is cancer. There's not a why me. I have been more angry, I would say, this time.
Okay.
Definitely. But not overwhelmingly so. And if I'm honest as well, because I knew it was in two lymph nodes, I wouldn't say I was waiting for it to happen, but I wasn't also overly surprised that it happened at some point. I always knew that was a potential. I knew the statistics, and the fact that it was in two lymph nodes made it more likely. I wasn't living my life waiting for it to happen, but I knew it was a possibility. But yeah, the secondary diagnosis was completely different to my primary diagnosis. It just changes everything.
I think it's that loss of future, maybe loss of, I mean, you know, your lifestyle, your career, all the things that you've worked towards. You sort of think, that's not going to necessarily happen. You know, your retirement, your future with your husband and your children growing up. It takes away so much because you can only live on almost today and in very short bursts of time.
Yes.
It's very hard to look beyond that. And I guess with you knowing that you've had a scan result that did come back as more progression, you're always on that waiting.
It's always that three. At the moment, I'm on 3 monthly scans.
Mm.
So it is always you have your scan. You wait for your result, you get your result, hopefully it's a big sigh of relief, and you think, oh, 3 months, but it's not 3 months, because 2 months in, you're worrying about your next scan before,
aren't
you?
I don't know about you, but I have like a 4-week wait between my scan and my results.
By
the time you've had your scan, you've had your results, you've only actually got 6
weeks before you have your next one.
So it's really not very long in time, and you've always got that anxiety hanging over you.
Yeah, and it's changed my work, because I took the decision to take or apply for ill health retirement, which I got. Because of the job I was doing at the time was quite heavily focused, a lot of work in A&E, so a lot of infection risk, didn't know what was going on. I was a cardiology nurse, so you have to be on the ball.
Yeah.
And so I took the decision, and also from, as you've just said, part of me was like, no one else is having my retirement money, I'm having my retirement, I'm having my
pension. Your retirement now, yes.
Yeah. So I took it, but I had tier one, which means I can still work, so I'm still working one day a week on the nurse bank, which is, because I love being a nurse, so it's the best of both worlds now.
And how do you fill your time other days?
Well, I don't seem to have much spare time, I'm not quite sure.
living a lot.
Yeah. So as I say, I do a swim, I'll go to spin class, go to gym, meet friends, coffee for lunch. There's the stuff that needs doing at home. I haven't started yet, but I've just volunteered to go in half a day a week to the primary school in the village and listen to children reading.
Oh, lovely.
I'm working one day a week. So, and then obviously there's all the appointments that you have to fit
the
in.
Admin and the cancer.
Yeah,
it's
all that
type of thing. Job being a cancer patient.
Yeah.
Where have you found your support, or what have you done to create a sort of better environment around the condition?
So as I said before, I've got lots of support from a wide group of friends. My husband's brilliant. If I'm okay, he's okay, if that makes sense.
Do you feel you have to be okay for him?
No, I can tell him how it feels sometimes when I need to.
Good.
And he'll listen, and that's good. I found a lot of support in the secondary breast cancer community through Breast Cancer Now, Make Seconds Count, Secondary Sisters, and all Future Dreams, all the things on Instagram and things has made a big difference. Just seeing everybody else getting on and living their life, and how they're in HER2 things as well. That last week that did take me off my feet. It knocked me for six when
I heard
that news.
Yeah, because we just heard, obviously this won't be coming out at real time, but this was, we've just heard that Enhertu has been not accepted by a NICE for being put in the NHS, which is a drug for, at the moment, HER2 positive patients in the UK. It's actually licensed now in Scotland and many other places for HER2 low, which is for people that are on the borderline, who didn't have any form of medication for that side of it before. And we're really hoping that there is a lot of petitions and conversation and hopefully it'll be going to Parliament, and you know, we've just got to keep that hope that it will be there for as and when people need it. But you know, it's really disheartening when you see these things that are there.
So that did floor me, because I was really expecting them to change their mind and say yes. So I threw some things, I cried, I got quite cross.
I like the idea of throwing things. You need like one of those rage rooms when you have
the poor dog was like, she came over and sat at my feet. I was like, what is my mum doing?
But it can hit, even though it's something that you're not necessarily eligible for now because your drugs are working, it's that, it's like a lifeline taken away from you. Hope.
And that's what I put in that. So I've been taking part in some of the Breast Cancer Now campaign, and that was how I ended my statement. I felt like hope had been taken away from me, because the likelihood is that that would be my next line of treatment. So that I've got scans coming up in April. So in the back of my mind, I'm like, what if these scans are not what I want them to be?
What
happens next? Because if I go for a different treatment, I can't come back to Enhertu if it does get.
You'd have to have that first before the other treatment.
That's what my consultant had said.
How, like, do you allow yourself to go into those dark places of thinking about, I might not be here next year, how am I going to cope with that?
I try not to. I do probably only think a year or so ahead now, because I do think at the moment I'm well and I'm stable and there's still lots of treatment options for me. So I think I can look a year ahead. Mm-hmm. I would struggle to look 3 years, 4 years ahead, because you just don't know what's going to happen. So I do struggle with that, and my mind does go dark places sometimes. I have a list of songs on my phone, as we probably all do, that might be used for my funeral.
I mean, it's hard, isn't it? Because I always think about this. Like, I've got a particular song that I do want, and I'm not really sure about the others. I've got like a vague idea. But firstly, when you hear that song, if you ever hear it actually on the radio or something, it does really take you to that, oh God, this could be my song.
Yeah.
But also, doesn't it get you thinking that you want something that will be played? Because like, there's songs I like, but I know they're not very common songs, or they're by artists, they're not really played. And I want those songs to come on. So it does remind those people. So you kind of want to, you have to really think.
I'm going into a big upbeat one. I'm going into Let's Get This Party Started by Pink.
Oh my God.
Oh, I love Pink. I love Pink.
Brilliant. Oh, I can just sit in there like dancing down the aisle.
And
with
people might think that's morbid, but then we should all be doing that, shouldn't we?
A celebration of life.
Something could happen to any of us or any member of our family tomorrow, and we wouldn't know what to do. So why shouldn't we do that now? I do find I try and sort of find a middle road with that, because it could be quite easy to go down that route of, we're just going to do everything we want to do. But I have to think that I have a husband and I have children. They're grown up children, but I have a husband. So you can't just do everything you want to now and then leave them
with nothing.
With nothing. There has to be that middle ground.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
And what if you could go back and say to yourself, you know, younger self, or to someone else starting their position, what advice would you give?
One that everybody says, don't Google stuff.
Definitely don't Google.
If you're going to read stuff on the internet, go to the right places to read it, because that's all fact, not Dr. Google. Also try, and I'm saying this, but I'm guilty of it myself, try not to think 5, 6, 7 steps ahead, which I know that I say I'm guilty of doing. My consultant, when I speak to my consultant and I ask her questions, and she's constantly, Tracy, we're nowhere near that yet. We don't need to talk about that yet. It is trying to deal with what's in front of you and deal with that before you get to the next step. If you've got questions, ask them. Don't be frightened to ask your consultant a question that you think is silly, because it won't be. And if you don't understand the answer, you ask again. It's always good to have somebody with you or make notes. But yeah, I think that's it. Don't try and look too far ahead, because you'll just tie yourself up in knots. Deal with what you need to deal with now,
And before we finish, we are asking everybody the same question, as in what's the one thing that gets you up in the morning and puts a smile on your face?
I've normally, most days I've got plans of things to do, so that's what gets me up. And I think I need to have those plans, because if it was a bad day, it's quite easy just to sit and do nothing. But yeah, having plans of things to do, know what I'm going to be doing, get up, have a look at the window, see what the weather's like. I've got the dog. Dog needs a walk.
Yeah.
So all those type of things. My son doesn't live at home. He's married. My daughter's now back at home, but she'll be up and out to work. But I'll have heard her up and about. So it's, yeah. It's what you've got to do and achieve that day. Always have a goal in that day, something that you need to do, even if it's meeting somebody for a coffee. That's enough to get you up and out. And there's plenty of times when I could have quite easily not gone and done something that I planned, but I've gone and done it, and I've never regretted going and doing it.
That's good advice. I'm guilty of that, especially if I'm in a lupus flare or I'm struggling, and I am guilty of making an excuse or just saying that I'm not feeling great. But actually, like you say, it's right. If sometimes pushing yourself and being around people where you can be honest and say, yeah, I'm coming out, but I'm not feeling great, you know, but yeah, I'm going to come out. And like I say, it can be therapeutic in itself by doing that.
Normally your good friends know that as soon as they see you, and they say, are you all right? But let's just go with it.
Well, thank you for coming. We do appreciate you coming out and sharing your story.
It's been lovely. Enjoyed it.
It's been wonderful to speak to you. And thank you so much. And we really hope that, you know, you absolutely love what we've created for
you. Yes, I'm sure I will.
And hopefully it'll help lots of other people.
Yes, hopefully.
Your story.
Yeah.
So thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Mortal and Strong podcast. If you want more information about today's voice or how to get support on any of the issues we've discussed today, please head to our website, www.mortalandstrong.com. And remember, click subscribe, find us on all social media platforms, and to find out ways of how to support what we are doing or more information on the project, head to our website. Thank you for listening.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.